to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up. Good morning, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily on this Tuesday, March the 31st. I am your host, Mike, and we got a great show for you today. As award-winning columnist Dave Hyde from the Sun Sentinel joins me on the podcast to talk all things Miami Dolphins. We talk about the Miami Dolphins moves in free agency. We talk about Brian Flores as he heads into year two. And, of course, we talk about the upcoming NFL draft. And one of Dave's latest articles in which he spoke to three former NFL general managers to get their perspective on Joe Burrow, Tua, what Miami should do, and all that. So it's a great, great conversation that you're not going to want to miss. Before I get to that, though, there's two things I want to mention in the world of the Miami Dolphins. As right now, the news is kind of slow as free agency, at least for Miami, has sort of come to a halt, and they sort of shift their focus to the draft. There's not too much to talk about, but two things worth mentioning. Number one, for those of you that haven't seen it, go to my Twitter account, at Dolphins Talk, and check out the video clip from Dan Orlovsky of ESPN. On Monday morning, he was on the ESPN show Get Up, and Dan pretty much, you know, makes the case that the Miami Dolphins have to, must, not even up for debate, you know, move up in round one and ensure they select Tua, the quarterback from Alabama. It's about a 1 minute clip and it's really worth watching. Like I said, I have it up on my Twitter account at Dolphins Talk. Go there and check it out. And the case Dan makes is essentially that the Miami Dolphins, you know, however many years ago, passed on Drew Brees. And that's been a mistake they have regretted ever since. And they can't make that same mistake twice in that, you know, they have to move up in round one and ensure they get Tua to be their next franchise quarterback. It's a compelling case. I will give him that, Dan. But I'm not sure I agree. Now, look, I like Tua. I have no problem if the Miami Dolphins select Tua. I don't know, though, if it's a they must trade up at all costs to ensure they get them type of deal. At this point in the game, I think I'm okay sitting at five. And if he's there, he's there. Great. If not, move on to plan B, which would be either Justin Herbert or Jordan Love. When it comes to in my opinion, the injuries are starting to scare me a little bit more than some other people. But it's a video worth watching. Like I said, it's about a one-minute clip from the ESPN show Get Up, where Dan Orlovsky, you know, who I respect a lot because, one, I think he's one of the most underrated people on TV when it comes to NFL analysis. You know, especially on ESPN, where they have just, you know, a countless people on all these shows, you know, sort of spitting out their opinions. And sometimes, like, who is this person? I've never even seen them before. And how are they an NFL expert? But when it comes to Dan Orlovsky, I actually respect his opinion a lot. And I think he's really, really good. But here, I don't know if I 100% agree with him that the Miami Dolphins must trade up at all costs to ensure they get Tua. I understand his point, though. I do understand his point, and it is a compelling one-minute video clip that everyone should go check out on my Twitter account at Dolphins Talk. The other thing I want to mention before we get to Dave Hyde is, look, for those of you who put stock into what the Vegas odds makers, you know, sort of set with their odds, I checked all the sports books and the online gambling sites. And, you know, as of, you know, March 31st, the Miami Dolphins are still the favorite to land Tua. When all is said and done after night one of the NFL draft, the Miami Dolphins are the favorite. The Chargers are the second favorite. So for those of you that, you know, read into that, the people in Vegas know what they're doing. They know what they're talking about. If they set those odds, they must know something. You know, the Miami Dolphins are still the favorites, you know, across the board at all the sports books and all the online gambling sites, I didn't find one that did not have the Miami Dolphins as the favorite to select Tua. So I just wanted to throw that out there and mention it because I know a lot of you read into that stuff and take that stuff very seriously. So I thought it'd just be worth a quick mention. Okay, so right now I'm going to take a quick break. And after the break, I will be joined by award-winning columnist from the Sun Sentinel, Dave Hyde, to talk all things Miami Dolphins. So sit tight, and we'll be back after this.
DolphinsTalk.com is your one stop for all things Miami Dolphins. With news, commentary, video, interviews, and the Webby award-winning DolphinsTalk.com daily podcast, DolphinsTalk.com has you covered on all of the latest happenings surrounding the Miami Dolphins. Whether it's training camp, the draft, free agency, or the current Miami Dolphins season, DolphinsTalk.com has it covered. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, at DolphinsTalk, and to visit the website, DolphinsTalk.com, each and every day. That's DolphinsTalk.com.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Dave Hyde from the Sun Sentinel. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm as good as anybody can be right now, right? A little odd times, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, little odd times, but at least we got some football here in the next month to talk about because they're going to move forward with this draft, right or wrong. They're moving forward with it, and it at least gives us something to think about, talk about, to get our focus off all the real, real stuff.
Yeah, can they spread it out over 2 weeks?
You know, that's not the worst idea in the world. It's really not the worst idea. It would put the NFL front and center. It would put them front and center for a while because there's nothing going on.
Yeah, I'm in favor of keeping it going, and just from a selfish standpoint. At the same time, I understand it's some of the questions teams will have, some of them will just have to go unanswered. So it's an unusual time for everybody.
Yeah, I actually heard Peter King and Mike Florio talk about this last week. And one of the things they said from the league's perspective is right now it's really bad. But who knows what it's going to be in May or June if they try to push this off. It could be worse. So it's like just maybe forge through it now. It is what it is. It's not the ideal situation. But if they wait, it could be a worse situation. So there's no right or wrong answer. It's kind of just, I guess we'll go through with it.
Yeah, it's sort of like schedules come out typically a week or 2 weeks before the draft. And I'm curious to see, more curious to see what happens with them. Because
Did you see on Monday what Peter King put out actually this morning? Because this will air on Tuesday. Peter King this morning put out the league might hold off on that till May. And they might set up the first month where each team gets two home games and two road games just because if the schedule has to be cut back to either 12 or 14 games, each team moves the same amount of games. And also they're going to cram in all the games. So say for the Miami Dolphins, those first four games probably won't be against the Patriots, Jets, or Bills, and they're going to try to put those games into the final 12 weeks of the year. So should the season be cut short for some reason, you at least play all the teams inside your own division. That has been talked about.
That'll be interesting because I was talking with someone last week about that general idea of if they have to cut down to 12 or 8 games, your first month of scheduling will then be really important. And and the league has to have some type of thought process and if they can and try to make things level for that. So there's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts here, and we all realize sports is a small part of it, but hey, we have to go somewhere for fun. So
absolutely
see what the NFL does here.
I know it's I don't envy them in the least because there's probably no right or wrong answer here with what they do. Last year the Miami Dolphins obviously moved on from Adam Gase to Brian Flores, and you know, Flores has gotten a ton of praise for how he handled the 2019 season with the roster he had, which was kind of a makeshift roster that was constantly changing week to week. What are your thoughts on Flores overall as we head into year two with him at the helm?
Well, you had to like what he did. You like his First of all, his backstory is incredible. Rising up like he did from the projects, I'm not sure a NFL coach has any type of a background like he does. So you start there, who he is, a rock solid person. And yeah, he brought in, and you know, Adam Gase had a very lax culture, and just go to the last year when they started signing the Frank Gores and veteran guys, and they said they're going to be our culture. Well, my thought always is, in pro sports, in any sports really, the coach sets the culture. The coach is the culture. That's the way it was. The great one, Don Shula, Jimmy Johnson, Pat Riley. I mean, they are the culture. And Adam Gase didn't seem to understand that, or he couldn't set the culture here. And so you had Flores come in, and you know, one of his first messages were small, that we're going to be on time. Dolphins had a huge problem with players not showing up. It's hard to imagine in any pro sports, but they did. We're not going to park in. No, he had a big thing about wheelchair handicap parking.
I saw that video conference. He went off of one of the reporters.
Yeah, he did say, yeah, Saffedine.
Saffedine, yeah. I love Saffedine. He's the nicest man alive, too.
You know, but that was in the wheelhouse because there was somebody who was parking in a wheelchair spot last year. So, you know, you little things like that are things that set the culture of a team. And you know, I always get back to, and it's a completely different team, but the Heat. And I was talking with Shane Battier once, and I said, is it really different here? You know, we hear the Heat way, the Heat culture. And he goes, look, I've been on, I don't know how many teams he's been on, 4, 5, 6 teams. And he said, the difference here is if they say the practice starts at noon, everybody will have their shoes laced up, their knee pads on, and they're standing at midcourt ready to go. And I said, well, isn't that everywhere? And he goes, that's nowhere. You know, that's a few teams in the league. Every, you know, people will be shooting half court shots at noon, their shoes untied. And so, again, little things set the big things in a culture. And I think that was Brian Flores' start. Now, there's still questions to me. He fired both his coordinators left. One was fired, and one went on his own. Huge turnover in the coaching staff. The way you win to me in football is you get two good systems, offense and defense, set up by obviously the head coach and his coordinators. You get a culture, and then you get players to fit those systems. And over a period of a few years, you get a good team. You develop a good team, especially on offense. You need time, and so. You know, it's almost like they 1 year was wasted in that regard. So I'm, you know, I remember in 2008 being high on Tony Sperano. I remember in 2016 being high on Adam Gase. So I think we hopefully learned. Let's let things play out a little here.
We've been down this road before. Where after the first year, you know, all the fan base gets excited. We found our guy. But it seems like year one's always great. And mind you, it was just 5 wins last year. I know the circumstances. It seems like 5 wins is almost like winning the Super Bowl with that roster. But it was just 5 wins. But, yeah, it is a wait-and-see approach because we've been burned before by Gase and Tony Sperano and others. And plus you look at his offensive line coach hiring last year. He hired an offensive line coach, gave him 3 practices, and let the guy go. And now the 2 coordinators on top of that, that is one area of concern is that, you know, I know he's still a young head coach in that regard, but finding the right people to put around him, it's not like, I mean, Chan Gailey was out of the league last year. He could have had him last year if he wanted him because he sat at home. He went with some. So there's a lot of questions in that regard.
Yeah, and I think those are fair questions. And, you know, you can dress it up as a real positive for Flores in that, look, he saw things weren't working, and instead of trying to make and force them to work in year 2 and you know, and then having to make a change, he got ahead of it early. Same with when Pat Flaherty was let go after a few practices, as you said, The offensive line coach, that, okay, you can dress it up as a positive and that he saw this isn't going to work and immediately cut bait. Now, again, but, you know, you got to get the right people in there. You got to get your right team and staff. And so, you know, I'm sort of just observing to see where it goes right now.
Yep. And one of the other things, looking back at 2019, which really surprised me some, because the trade for Josh Rosen, not that they made the trade, it's that after that Washington game, you know, I was in the room where he was talking to the media, and he said right there after the game, Josh Rosen will be my starting quarterback next week. We had to take him out of this game because he wasn't performing well, which all made sense. And then literally 24 hours later, he goes, Ryan Fitzpatrick's my starting quarterback, and Josh Rosen never saw the field again. Now, you know, his spin is, I'm trying to win the games, which I get. I get that. But to never put Rosen back on the field from mid-October on just seemed very confusing. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would have liked to see Rosen out there. Look, I get the problem that head coaches in that everybody – first of all, Ryan Fitzpatrick surprised me, surprised everybody, I think, last
Absolutely.
Year. And,
yep.
and how he not just played, but how people followed him. How he was the, you know, everybody's waiting for Ryan Tannehill to be a leader. Well, a couple times we've seen leaders here. Chad Pennington had the same presence that Fitzpatrick did. And guys just like to play with them. And to be led by them. So I think Flores and the coaches had an issue that everybody on the team liked Fitzpatrick, and for valid reasons. And if all of a sudden you say, well, we're going with Rosen, you're going to possibly lose the team. And so that was the, you know, beyond where's this big picture going at quarterback, that was, you know, another issue, a big issue that the staff had to deal with. So, but yeah, I thought they would have, especially the last couple games.
Exactly.
You lose those last couple games. You got Joe Burrow in your sights right now, and they. I'm still trying to figure out how they won in New England and the Cincinnati game.
Would have been a prime spot to start Rosen. You're at home.
Yeah.
It's Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Nobody's even watching the game or paying attention outside other people in Cincinnati or Miami. Nobody's watching from around the league. And then if he wanted to start Fitzpatrick the following week on the road at New England, that would have been fine. I don't think anybody. But to give Rosen, I mean, just give him one more chance. I mean, there were games where they were blown out against Cleveland. They were blown out pretty much against the Giants and stuff. I mean, get Rosen more time or get him any time in those games. It just made very little sense.
The interesting thing is I just did a column, went in Sunday's paper,
yep.
talking to three GMs.
I was going to ask about that, yep.
Yeah, and you know, ask them about, you know, do you trade up for Tagovailoa? Trade up for Burrow? Do you draft Tagovailoa? And none of them wanted to do those things. And I was like, oh, these are the – you know, there's no, you know, surefire way out, which was what at quarterback, which is what this whole season was set up to do. Make it an easy, we're going to get the franchise quarterback. One of them brought up, he likes Rosen. He still likes Rosen. He still believes Rosen can be the guy. And, you know, I'm not dismissing that. When somebody says that, who's done the work studying them and, you know, Brian Flores and the staff gave him some tough love last year. Let's see how he comes back and who he is. And you know, not completely write him off. It's whereas last year it was, boy, this is his job. That's what I thought. You got to play him,
yep.
start him and all that. Now it's okay. He's got to show us. But I'm not dismissing it.
Yeah. I think with Rosen, which is kind of not his fault either. I know what – UCLA, he had a few different offensive coordinators. Then he goes to Arizona. That's a new offensive coordinator. Then he goes to Miami. Last year, new offensive coordinator. Now he's got another offensive. So it seems like this kid can't get settled with one offense. And it's every year he's got to learn something new, which, right
yeah,
or wrong, that's tough on anybody. But I think for him, he's got
that
a bad
tough.
Break.
That's tough. But I think they want to see him work harder, be, you know, ultra committed. You know, once in a while be the last guy in the facility, that type of stuff. So I, yeah, sure. You know, getting changing offenses, especially at the start, isn't easy, and it's not helping him at all. But I think there are things he can do and has to do if he wants to have the career that a lot of people thought he could have.
Yep. Now, in your article, when you spoke to the three former NFL general managers, pretty much none of them felt like trading up for Joe Burrow was worth it because he just had not so much a one-year wonder, but I guess a little bit of a one-year wonder in that his senior season was his big year, and the years previous to that were just, you know, okay. And with Tua, you know, his health and obviously the size is a bit of a concern there. So it does make you sort of look, okay, well, if none of these people who have been in these roles for many years and such, if they don't love those options, what's next? Which leads you to Herbert and Love. Yeah. It's a tough spot for the Dolphins because on paper, everything tells you trade up for Joe Burrow or take Tua if he falls in your lap maybe, or if you got to slide up to three. But if everyone's – not everyone, but if many people who have been around the block, let's just say, are like, oh, those guys kind of scare me. Now you're looking towards Herbert and Love, which it's a tough spot for the Dolphins, I will say that, because all these guys have flaws, and none of them are a finished product in my eyes.
Yeah, and I think we're now understanding once again, as if we haven't for the last 20 years, how difficult it is to draft a quarterback, to find the franchise quarterback. And so that is, you know, the Dolphins have been there for a while. The disappointing part is last year was sacrificing good part to make it easier. And it doesn't look like it's going to be easier.
No, it doesn't look like it'll be easier at all. And whatever they do, I have no clue what's going to happen on draft night. It's going to be must-see TV. I know that because they could pick any one of these kids. And honestly, you could probably make a case for them picking any one of these kids. And I don't know how you can be upset if you're a fan. What? Because there's just so many. It's just, I don't know. There's just a lot going on there.
I will say this. The teams that have found a franchise quarterback, there's a measure of luck involved.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the Brady and all. But there's also, like Kansas City, nobody thought Patrick Mahomes was going to be this great, you know, change the league coming out. And yet one guy in Kansas City did. Now he's a general manager, convinced Andy Reid of it. Okay. And same in Baltimore. No one, look, every team passed on Lamar Jackson once at least, and they traded back up and got him. So, I mean, at some point, somebody in the organizations has seen something good enough to find the franchise quarterback. And that's really what the Dolphins need. They need someone to fall in love with the right guy and go get that guy.
Yeah, and I've actually had this thought now for a week, and once again, I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I think when you look at those four guys who are all supposed to go round one, sort of top of the draft, Herbert checks most of the boxes you want. When it comes to arm strength, it's a lot better than someone like Joe Burrow. When it comes to size and health, you know, obviously he has an advantage there over someone like Tua, and I know Miami scouted him hard last year too because they thought he was going to enter that draft in 2019, and I remember reading multiple reports in all the papers that Tannenbaum, when he was still there with Chris Greer, putting a lot of work with Herbert just to scout him and watch him. And I'm wondering, you know, if you look at all the things, the possible cost it would take to trade up to get Joe Burrow, and obviously the red flags with Tua, if they don't just, I guess, play it safe with someone like Herbert to be like, you know, we can teach him what he needs to be taught, but he checks most of the boxes for everything else.
I think Herbert's, in the words of a scout, is the cleanest guy. You know, arm strength, size.
Yep.
He showed against Wisconsin, which I had to go back and watch the tape after some of the – I made a comment earlier, he's not mobile. Well, he showed he can run. The interesting thing with him to me is if the Dolphins are interested in Burrow, Cincinnati coaches had him at the Senior Bowl and got
Herbert,
a nice. Yeah, had Herbert at the Senior Bowl, excuse me, and had a good look at him up close. And evidently, Tomlin scouts, there are some things that he could be coached up and done better with. And so if you get the right guy, and here it is, it sounds like, oh, Herbert's the guy. Herbert could be the guy then. Then you get into his personality. Is he a leader? Yeah. Is he, you know, Jordan Love, every game he'd have two or three plays where you're like, wow, this guy's incredible. And then his senior year, you know, some guys say just write it off because a new coordinator, bad talent around him. And so if you're a GM and your career is built on making this decision and, you know, you're waking up at 3 a.m., these are the things rattling around in your mind. You know, and which one do you trust can be the guy? And
I know.
So I'm curious. I really, you know, I'm torn. I would trade up for Burrow just from the standpoint that you get, you know, you sacrifice this past year. You got a lot of draft picks, and part of the idea of getting the draft picks was to get a franchise quarterback. So I would make the play for Burrow, but you know, there are a lot of reasons to do other ways too if you're the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, if he's number one on your board and you can obviously trade up with Cincinnati if they're open to a trade, then you can make the case he's number one on our board. We can part with the picks because we have so many picks. Go with your number one on the board, and you can make that case.
Would you trade Burrow, Minka Fitzpatrick, and
Laremy Tunsil.
Half of Laremy Tunsil for Joe Burrow. My larger point is, if Burrow is a franchise quarterback, if he's that guy, no one's going to be saying in 5 years, yeah, but they traded three number ones.
No one cares. No one will even remember.
No one would care.
No one will even know what the trade is. It'll be out of their mind. Absolutely. Free agency. The Miami Dolphins are very active, signed 10 players, predominantly on the defensive side of the ball, which I think makes sense because you look at this draft and it's a weak draft when it comes to pass rushers and stuff like that. So it seemed like they wanted to fill those holes in free agency. But the big signing was Jones at cornerback, where they, you know, that's probably their biggest free agent signing since Sue. Were you surprised they opened up the checkbook and signed a big name guy like that and paid him what he got paid this offseason?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I was, because I thought, no way, they got a shut down cornerback already, and in Xavier Howard, they can, you know, you can find another good cornerback for cheaper somewhere, and you make your defense work. Now, the idea, assuming Howard's available, health and the off field stuff, that they got two lockdown cornerbacks, and that changes what you can do on defense. And it, you know, it goes with Brian Flores' philosophy for his defense, and also the Patriots' way, which was invest in your secondary and let the pass rushers and all that change over. And so the other part of it, you touched on it, the offense heavy draft and all that. I think there's also, it's developing players in your offense in your way is more important than developing them in your defense. And I think that was part of some of the thinking anyways to this too. You know, then it's also, you can stay competitive with a good defense a lot. And so that's the way to go. So we'll see. You know, I like what they did. They had so many holes to fill, but it seems like they went about filling them the right way. We also all know that maybe half these decisions won't work out if free agency is, you know, any gauge to this specific decisions, elite free agency in the past around the league. So we'll see how it goes, but I like what they did.
Yeah, absolutely, because it looked like, too, from looking at the contracts, most of the contracts are really just two-year deals, so they're not tied into most to these guys long-term. So if it's not going to work out, they can get out of it pretty easily. And with all the salary cap space they have, you know, that seemed to make sense. Aside from Jones, did any one of the signings really stand out? Like, hey, I like that move a lot. I think he's really going to help. Did anybody really jump off the page at you and say, I think that's a really good signing?
Well, I like Kyle. I've always liked Kyle Van Noy. I watched him the last couple of years with the Patriots, and now, you know, we'll see. Flores knows him as well as anybody, and brought him in from Detroit, put him in that defense, and made it work. And so, but you know, you better like him, and you better like Jones, because those are your two most expensive decisions. Now, the interesting thing: Ted Karras going 1 year and $4 million after starting center for the Patriots for 15 games. He obviously wasn't considered as good around the league as I would have thought, because that is a, from a value standpoint, that's a great deal for the Dolphins. You got a starting, a guy who can play guard center. He started at center 15 games for the Patriots last year. You know, you get that for 1 year and $4 million. That's a pretty nice value deal. The intriguing one to me is Ereck Flowers. Okay, here we go again.
A little wild card, there. Yeah, a little wild card.
Yeah, yeah, a bit of a wild card. And you know, I, some scouts, one of the guys I talked to loved the deal. Hey, he's guards is a better position for him. The other said, I don't know what they were watching on tape. So I didn't see Flowers enough to, you know, to, and I've gone back and looked at him a little, but not anything that tells me anything. So I'm curious to see how that one plays out.
Yeah, and I think with Ted Karras, that's the type of deal where, you know, when you're about halfway through the season, if he's playing well, you look to lock him up then and not even let him hit the open market next year. That's sort of a one-year show-me deal where if he is playing well again, because pretty much with the Patriots, he was only a full-time starter for 1 year. So he doesn't have a big resume to fall back on. But if he's playing well for Miami this upcoming year, you know, come middle of the season, if he's playing really well, they might want to lock him up long term, because I think, you know, he's not bad. He's not bad. And he can play either center or guard, which their offensive line needs so much help, honestly.
Right.
In this draft, they can find that help. But if he can play well, they're probably going to want to lock him up.
Yeah. The other thing they did in free agency, and this is common, every year, is they didn't make themselves desperate as much as this roster could for positions. I mean, they need a left tackle. We know that, but they're going to get one somewhere in the first round. Other than that, to line up next year, they don't really need anything. You know, they need another running back. They need a young quarterback. They need a tight end who actually can play tight end. But they have guys in those positions right now to line up. And that's part of the goal of every free agent, period.
Yep, absolutely. Last question for you, Dave. Looking back now, we're about, I don't know, however many months removed from when they made the trades for where they moved on from Laremy Tunsil and Minka Fitzpatrick. You know, it's nice to accumulate a lot of picks. It's great because it gives you power this time of year as we enter the draft. It's a whole different story, as we've seen for years in Miami, actually hitting on those picks and picking the right players. Looking back with either Tunsil or Minka, and obviously two very separate situations, because with Minka, it seemed like he wasn't happy and wanted out. Laremy Tunsil seemed very happy and was in no rush to leave. Do you think Miami made the right call with those moves, looking back in time now?
You know, I think the trade value was so overwhelming in their favor for Houston, from Houston, that I get why they traded Laremy Tunsil. It made, you know, two number ones, number two. Plus, they're not sinking what will be $18, $20 million a year in Laremy Tunsil. So I get it. I get that one, especially on a building team. Or rebuilding as it is. Yeah. I still don't understand the Minka Fitzpatrick.
Me neither. Guy complained, don't mean you trade him. Just because, you know, a lot of players aren't happy and they will complain about what team they're on, their playing time. Just because a guy complained doesn't mean you trade him away, especially a first round pick who only played once. I mean, who the heck is he to make all these types of demands? He's got 1 year under his belt. That one I will never understand.
Yeah, Dan Marino went into Don Shula's office in the late, I believe it was before the 89 season.
Yep, I remember that story.
And asked, would it be better for both sides if for me to be traded? I mean, he didn't pound the table, but he said,
He floated it out there.
Said, I want to be traded. And there's no way the Dolphins, and I'm not pretending Minka Fitzpatrick is Dan Marino, but the larger point, just because a player wants to be traded doesn't mean a team should trade. And what I don't fathom is Chris Greer took such a stand in drafting Minka Fitzpatrick.
Oh yeah,
weren't going to trade down. This is the guy, and while you kind of scratched your head, they put him at slot cornerback a lot last year because that's where he was needed. That's not who he is, and you saw who he was in Pittsburgh, and so I don't understand that, especially on a – he's exactly the type of player you should be building with. Cheap, young, very good.
Control him for four more years at a cheap contract, a guy which they needed help at now because now with no Rashad Jones, they probably would have slid him over to that safety spot full time.
Well, now you make me think. I'm sitting here looking at mock drafts, and some of them have taken a safety with that 18th pick, and I'm thinking, well, he better be better than Minka.
I did a mock draft yesterday, and I had them taking Xavier McKinney out of Alabama at pick 26, just because I felt like another Alabama safety who's a little bit of a Swiss Army knife who can do it all, high football IQ. We've been down this road before, but just because, one, he didn't want to be here doesn't mean you can't be scared off of taking someone else or two different people. So,
and obviously that was Brian Flores with a big input in that. And
yes,
the disappointing thing to me there is Flores doesn't coach like Belichick. He can't. I mean, Belichick's fear factor among players is great. You know, he thunders around. And Flores coaches by getting to know players and having them respect him and understand where he's coming from. And I think that was the frustrating part with Minka. He didn't feel like he was getting through. Minka still wanted to be traded. And at some point, the franchise cut, you know, just decided we are going to trade him and get and they took a shot with Pittsburgh. Remember, Pittsburgh was 0-2. Roethlisberger was out for the season.
They were hoping they were hoping.
Yeah.
It didn't quite work out that way because they won more than anybody expected. And a lot of reasons why they won more was because Minka Fitzpatrick was picking up a fumble, running it back for a touchdown,
making an interception,
running it back for a touchdown.
Every week.
He was scoring a touchdown. He was carrying their offense, too. It's like, this is unbelievable. This is the guy Miami was hoping to have, and he's doing it for Pittsburgh now.
Yeah. So, look, Laramie Tunsil, I thought they got value from.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it all comes down to you got to make those draft picks work. But I got that one. It was odd that it was right on the edge of the season. You know, going back, what I had written, because I thought they really did need to make some trades to get some flexibility for draft day in case the situation which they're in now presented itself where they don't have a sure thing and they might need to trade up. So I thought they needed some draft. I thought they would have traded Xavier Howard a year ago, and I wrote that. They don't have to invest in him. He had two knee surgeries at the time, and they don't have to give him a big contract, and they'll get value for a shutdown cornerback. But the idea was the same. The philosophy was the same. We need to trade some talent to get some draft picks and have flexibility.
Yeah, and that's what they have this year, so we'll see what they do in a month. I'm sure it'll be very interesting, and there'll be a lot to talk about after those 3 days of the draft when it's all said and done. Dave, thanks so much for a few moments of your time today. Everyone, be sure to read the work of Dave Hyde over at the Sun Sentinel, sunsentinel.com, and also follow him on Twitter at Dave Hyde Sports. Dave, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Yep, it's been fun. We'll do it again.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.